You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Hurts is back. Hurts is being chased. He is firing for the end zone, and it is incomplete. And the Bucs take over on downs. The Eagles have not just been beaten. They have been taken apart. They have been just brought to their knees by the Tampa Bay Bucs.
I didn't do a good enough job, and obviously we lost five of the last six and lost today. And it's almost like we couldn't get out of the rut we're in, and that's all of us.
Okay, welcome to the show. We are Unsportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio. ESPNU, we are presented by Progressive Insurance, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. Are you wearing green on purpose
yes,
today?
Yes, the Kelly green is for Pat Costello, our producer. RIP to the Philadelphia Eagles season. But there is a silver lining because it was just bad enough to get Nick Sirianni fired.
Just bad enough.
just bad enough.
It wasn't
just
great.
Just bad enough to get Nick Sirianni fired.
It wasn't great.
That was a disaster. And I got to be honest, I'm the idiot that came on here yesterday, and I'm like, you know what? The draw is kind of in their favor. The Lions have had a great run. The Bucs aren't that good. Maybe the old Eagles team could turn it around. But yes, congratulations to the Bucs. Congratulations to the Bills. We will get to both of them. But after a 32-9 victory by the Bucs over the Eagles yesterday, the Eagles finished their season after a 10-1 start, losing 6 of 7, including the postseason, and one of the great collapses we've ever seen. And I have no idea why I had any belief in this team.
Yeah, I'm confused as to why you would actually trust the Philadelphia Eagles.
Me too.
I mean, they finished the season losing 6 of 7. I mean, we haven't seen a collapse like this to what, the 2020 Steelers, when they started 11-0 in that COVID year? I mean, that's how bad this thing was. You allowed Baker Mayfield to do something that no quarterback in Tampa Bay Bucs history has ever done, which is throw for over 300 yards and 3 touchdowns in a playoff game. And Tom Brady played for that franchise the last 3 years. I mean, think about that. That's how atrocious that Eagles defense is, particularly their secondary. They couldn't tackle anybody, whether it was Trey Palmer or David Moore. I mean, it was take your turn with those skill position players from the Bucs in terms of making explosive plays in the passing game, and they made Baker Mayfield look like the number one overall pick. I mean, last night he played near flawless. He had a 119.8 passer rating. So I will give credit where credit is due. Tampa looked like the more prepared team. They went out and executed the game plan on both sides of the ball. But if you're Jeffrey Lurie, how could you stomach that embarrassing performance by your franchise, the second worst playoff loss in Eagles history?
If you are trying to stomach it, I guess you could talk about the injuries. You could point to certainly Jalen Hurts being banged up as a reason why that was contributing to the loss last night. But that's not the only reason.
No.
I mean, when we were analyzing this game yesterday, Evan, I was surprised that you thought that the Eagles would have a shot simply because of that secondary. I had zero faith in that secondary and felt like Mike Evans and Chris Godwin would absolutely eat them up.
Was that the most predictable outcome on Wild Card Weekend, Smalls?
I had no faith in the Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, I was right there with you. I had no confidence that the Eagles were going to be able to stop the Bucs. The first thing that you and I said when we saw the draw was, how in the world is that secondary going to stop Chris Godwin and Mike Evans?
It's not going
to
happen.
I think the Bills over the Steelers was more predictable, but the fact that this got to a place of predictability is an indictment on the Eagles.
Well, I mean, which game was more one-sided?
Yes.
I mean, you could
the whole weekend outside of the Lions and the Rams.
You could say yes, but at least you felt like the Steelers were going to mount some type of momentum.
It was a one-score
at the end
game,
of the
right?
half after the block kick.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
you thought that they were actually going to
there
fall back into it. Yeah.
There was nothing.
The Eagles had no shot.
No,
I mean, Super Wild Card Weekend was not super, let's be honest. I mean, there was only one game in the Rams and the Lions that was even remotely close. I'm surprised at all of the blowouts. But this, let's go back to that not being able to tackle. I played football as a kid. I wasn't good. But I know that early on in third and fourth grade when I started playing football, they taught you how to tackle, right? Head on the side, wrap, drive, et cetera, et cetera. How can an NFL team that went to the Super Bowl that started 10-1 a year ago, they went to the Super Bowl. How do they not know how to tackle?
I don't know. But the Eagles secondary is old. slow, and unathletic. And that's not a good combination when you're talking about keeping up with one of the best receiving duos in the National Football League in a team that's young and hungry and upstart group with the Tampa Bay Bucks. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know how that's possible, but to me that is something that's an indictment on the coaching staff because tackling is fundamental to the game. That means there's a lack of effort in terms of all of the guys getting to the football. Even when you have those missed tackles, when the first man doesn't bring him down, you're supposed to have two or three other guys around that receiver, around that running back to tackle him and make sure that a big play doesn't become a touchdown, doesn't become a house call. And the fact that you've gone through two defensive coordinators, whether it's Sean Desai or Matt Patricia, and it still hadn't gotten fixed, that is an indictment on Nick Sirianni, the head coach. Either you're coaching it or you're letting it happen. And that, to me, has to be the most embarrassing thing for this franchise right now. And to me, it makes it an easy decision as to how they chart a path forward. They have to move on from Nick Sirianni in short order.
With so many intriguing names out there on the coaching market, I think you have to. And it's crazy to say that given the fact that the Eagles were in the Super Bowl last year. But you can't ignore the collapse that we've seen from this team. They had issues in the beginning, but they were masking it by winning. It was never pretty, but they were still finding ways to win. But clearly without Shane Steichen, this offense was never the same. The defense obviously had a lot of problems. I don't know if you guys saw Ray Lewis on the Manning cast last night talking about the tackling. He was physically disgusted.
He couldn't believe it, yeah.
He could not believe what he was watching. And that's embarrassing if you're the Eagles. You have to make a change.
So we're going to do a little choose your own adventure right now. We have two pieces of sound because this will be a good indication as to where you think this lies. Would you like to hear Nick Sirianni talking about his job or the coordinator's jobs? Because it's interesting both ways here because that's the way we're looking at it. Does he try to push other guys out and use that as his like on a lifeboat there? Or does he get pushed out? So choose your own adventure. Sirianni on himself or Sirianni on the coordinators? Which one's more important right now?
Himself.
Sirianni on himself.
All right, let's hear Nick Sirianni on his head coaching status.
Like I just said, over here, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about the guys. Again, there's a lot of guys in that locker room, all the guys in that locker room, every single one of them that put their heart and soul into this. I'm not worried about me. I'm not worried. I'm as the head coach, I'm just trying to be there for our guys and our staff right now, you know, through a tough time. Obviously, we didn't finish anywhere near we wanted to finish. So, again, my heart feels for these guys. You know, we're all taking it hard, and that's where my mind is right now.
There's a reason I set it up that way, and I asked you guys that question. Because that indicates to me that both of you don't think that Nick Sirianni can walk into the owner of the team, Jeffrey Lurie's office, or Howie Roseman, the general manager, and say, listen, I made a couple of mistakes here. Let me go out and get Frank Reich, who used to be here, who I worked for in Indy, to be my offensive coordinator. Let me go look around the league for a new defensive coordinator, et cetera, et cetera. That indicates to me both of you believe, no. He doesn't have an excuse anymore. He can't throw anybody else under the bus. This is on him.
No, he doesn't get that benefit of the doubt. He doesn't deserve that opportunity because the time to be there for your guys was not after the game in the locker room, but it was during the preparation. Or how about the six-game streak where you were losing five or six games to end the regular season? That was the time to be there for your guys. I mean, think about this. Last night, that offense was 0-for-11 combined on third down and fourth down. 0-of-11. 0-of-9 on third down, 0-of-2 on fourth down. That's absolutely inexcusable. And you were blitzed 59% of the time. And you know why you were blitzed 59% of the time? Because you had no plan to beat the blitz. I mean, Jalen Hurts averaged 4.6 yards per pass play when he was blitzed as opposed to 10 yards per pass play when he wasn't. You had no plan for the blitz. You had no plan for third down. It's an absolute embarrassment. And so, no, as a coach, I'm not going to allow you to go out there and try to right your wrongs. You had plenty of time to right your wrongs over the last 2 months. And so when he's sitting there talking about he's not worried about what's going to happen to him, you know why he's probably not worried? Because he knows what's going to happen to him. He's going to get fired. There has to be accountability when you have this kind of late season collapse. There has to be accountability when a team that is largely the same from a squad a year ago that got to the Super Bowl gets bounced in the first round of the playoffs by a squad that is on a reclamation project with the quarterback in Baker Mayfield, who couldn't sniff the field with the Carolina Panthers last year. That's how bad your team was. So you absolutely deserve to get fired today. And I don't think this is going to take a really long time for Jeffrey Lurie to come to that conclusion.
Yeah, and if they fired Doug Peterson, who won a Super Bowl there, I don't know why Nick Sirianni would be safe just because he went to a Super Bowl last year. But Baker Mayfield last night was talking about how from the start of their preparation until the game last night, this team was in sync. They knew what the game plan was, and they practiced it, and they were all in unison. Schematically, emotionally, they were all in lockstep with one another. And the Eagles came out and said the complete opposite. Nick Sirianni said, we were out of sync, and that's on me. That's coaching. You know, yes, the players are the ones that have to execute, but he's the one that was laying the foundation for everyone to be on the same page, and he took the blame last night.
There are a lot of coaches that lost their jobs over the course of the last week or two, right? Bill Belichick, greatest of all time, being one of them. At no point did it feel like the players quit on Bill Belichick. I will ask you, after watching the last 6 or 7 weeks for the Philadelphia Eagles, did they quit on Sirianni?
Yeah, they tapped out. They tapped out. And you know why? It's easy to do that as a player when you don't feel like your head coach has any answers. You know, when the problems keep presenting themselves, it's not like this is anything new from the Eagles. We knew their secondary was trash. We knew that the offense, the passing game didn't look quite right, and they were relying on explosive pass plays to A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. We knew that they hadn't fixed those things coming into the postseason. So as a player, when you know that you're going to be dealing with the same old issues, when any type of adversity comes up, the mentality goes to, here we go again. And that's what it looked like last night. When the Bucs routed the Philadelphia Eagles. Here we go again. More missed tackles, more explosive plays by the opposing offense, more of our offense starting, you know, backed up in the shadow of their own goal line. Think about it. Jalen Hurts last night with the play where he's, you know, throws it and gets the intentional grounding for a safety. Those are things that are uncharacteristic, but that's what happens when you don't feel like your coach has any answers for you as a player. You do things that are out of your sports character. And so that's why I'm not surprised of the outcome last night. And I would be shocked, sitting here today, I would be shocked if Jeffrey Lurie doesn't fire his head coach. That has to be step one in their offseason plan to get this program back on track.
Well, you don't have time for here we go again. I mean, you signed Jalen Hurts to this massive contract. And if he's your window to win, you need to capitalize on it now. You have a lot of good pieces in place. You need to make sure that you have the best coach to take this team to where it wants to go. The Philadelphia Eagles should be operating with a sense of urgency. The same thing we said about the Dallas Cowboys also applies to the Philadelphia Eagles today.
And there is no justification. And I don't think any Eagle fan will tell you, not from Pat Costello, my buddy Mike Rubin, who's out there tweeting at me, Mike Rowe 52, saying, oh, Eagles, out. All these people that are tweeting nonstop. And they've been tweeting about Sirianni from the beginning.
Yes,
right? This is not new.
I thought they were too harsh.
There's no Eagles fan that would say, no, I'd rather Sirianni than Vrabel. Forget even Belichick. Vrabel. Think about Vrabel in Philly.
Oh, he'd be a great fit
Look
in Philly.
Look how excited CeCe just got.
He'd be a great fit in Philly. He would be a great fit in Philly.
Now all of a sudden you're wearing that green, that Kelly green.
Yeah.
Now as a fan, because you're like, yeah, Vrabel, Philadelphia, let's go.
It just fits.
Right.
It fits.
So there's just better answers, right? We always talk about don't present a problem without solutions. There are countless solutions for the Philadelphia Eagles that don't include whatever this coaching staff actually is. Coming up. There's a guy who's a first ballot Hall of Famer who's been in the public eye as a head coach for 17 years. And last night he did something we have never seen him do. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus! Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/unsportsmanlike today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/unsportsmanlike.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. Evan Canty and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
Buffalo moves on and will host Kansas City. The Steelers season is at an end. That's the end of the game with the final score. The Buffalo Bills 31, the Pittsburgh Steelers 17.
We didn't do what was required to win tonight. We didn't take care of the ball. We didn't get the ball from them enough in an environment like this, and thus the score.
We knew being on the road, you got to come out and, you know, keep it close early, and we didn't. But, you know, it was probably the way we fought back there at the end and never stopped believing.
No, Pittsburgh did not do enough to win last night, but certainly amazing getting there, or so we thought. We are on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get a business insurance quote online in as little as 6 minutes. Visit ProgressiveCommercial.com for more information. Along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you. So the first game last night, the Bills beat the Steelers 31-17, setting up a huge showdown next week where Patrick Mahomes goes on the road for the first time at the Bills in the playoffs, which obviously that'll be a huge topic of conversation. Josh Allen was awesome last night. Give him all the credit in the world. 21 of 30, a 203, three touchdowns, eight carries, 74 yards and a touchdown, had a 52-yard touchdown run, was just phenomenal. As well as you're going to see him play, he was great last night. It became a one-score game late. It wasn't really that close. But the story of this game is really, guys, what happened after the game. And Mike Tomlin was holding his post-game press conference. Our very own Brooke Pryor, who is going to join us later in the show today, ESPN Steelers reporter, asked Mike Tomlin a question. And Mike Tomlin didn't answer, to say the least.
Mike, you have a year left on your contract.
He walked off. You have a year left on your contract, and Mike Tomlin, as stand-up of a guy as could be, walks off. I'm not going to crush him for that because it's him, and maybe there's a little bias in there of I have to give him the benefit of the doubt, but Smalls, we've never seen anything like that from him.
No, Mike Tomlin is someone that usually keeps his emotions in check. He chooses his words very carefully, and he knows that there's been all this speculation that's been circling about his future in Pittsburgh or his future in coaching in the NFL, period. And I know that maybe in the immediacy of losing a postseason game, his emotions were coming to the forefront there. But usually we don't see that out of Mike Tomlin. So he had to also know that by doing that, that would become a bigger story. I mean, this is not Mike Tomlin's first rodeo. He's been in the NFL for many, many years now. And I was just very surprised to see him respond in that manner.
17 years as a head coach, hasn't won a playoff game since 2016. Getting there with this team, minus TJ Watt last night, felt like an amazing accomplishment. Steelers fans are unnecessarily hard on him, but I was surprised by that last night, CeCe.
Yeah, it was a little bit surprising, but Mike Tomlin's not going to answer a question before he's ready to. And before the line of questioning could take a turn and go that route, he decided not to make the story about him by leaving the podium and going in there and talking to his guys. Now, I think we're going to have an answer relatively soon. I don't know if it'll happen this week, but certainly by next week about what his future is going to be. But I can understand Mike Tomlin's reaction, especially considering that there is the real potential that he could decide to walk away, take a step back from coaching in the National Football League.
Do you believe that that will happen?
I think it's a possibility. It's on the board. Mike Tomlin has a son that plays football at Boston College. Like, this is a situation now where, you know, you have to consider, you know, the quality of life, consider being there for your family. They've sacrificed so much for him to have the opportunity that he's had over the last 17 years to be the head coach of the Steelers. And even the workup or the lead up to getting the opportunity to be the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, that's the thing that we don't talk about a whole lot, the personal side and the sacrifices that these men make and their families make in order to do these hyper-competitive jobs. And so I could see a world where Mike Tomlin says, you know what, I'm going to put my family first, at least in the short term, have an opportunity to be a cheerleader for my son that's playing college football, and, you know, we'll see what happens after that. It is no question in my mind that if Mike Tomlin were to take a step back from coaching football, that he could have a job in broadcasting, you know, tomorrow. I mean, making head coach money. That's how much of a commodity Mike T would be. So, Yeah, I think we could live in a world where Mike Tomlin decides to take a couple of gap years and decide to talk about football and also lean into his personal life. I just, for somebody that you know can still do it at the highest of levels, to see him not on a sideline coaching in the National Football League, I feel like that would be a huge loss for everyone involved.
What's amazing with this is if he does what you just suggested he could do, and I'm emphasizing the could, not will.
Yeah, this
will,
is reckless speculation.
It's not reckless speculation. It's just speculation. When you have a walk-off like that, I'm going to take the reckless out. I think it's informed speculation. If he's got a year or so left on his deal or whatever it is, he's been there 17 years. The one thing about walking away from that job is you will never get a better one. The head coaching job at the Pittsburgh Steelers is the best head coaching job, arguably, in the NFL blank roster. Obviously, coaching Mahomes is better than coaching Kenny Pickett in this spot, or Mason Rudolph, or anybody else. But just in general, they are loyal to their employees. They're loyal to the coach. They are open-minded in the way in which they do business. Like, you will never find a better head coaching job than that. So I would assume, like, the best case scenario for Mike Tomlin, I'm sure, and this could never happen, is, hey, can you guys give me a year off and then I'll come back? I just need a break and then I'll come back. Like, can I have a leave of absence year? Because you don't want to voluntarily give up that Steelers job. But that, I think it's probably harder for him to walk away than it would be for any other coach in the NFL right now, including Andy Reid. I think Andy Reid could walk away and never coach again.
Yeah.
If Mike Tomlin were to walk away at 51 years old, despite the money he would get in broadcasting, if he ever thought he was going to have the itch to coach again, you're never getting a job like this.
You know, it's curious because didn't we say that about Bill Cowher too? Like, Bill Cowher walked away.
And he never came back.
And he never came back, but he was always rumored to be interested in all of these other jobs, yep. But he decided that he was never going to come back. I think there could be a situation where somebody offers Mike Tomlin a really cushy job on one of those pregame shows talking about the National Football League, and with all of the zingers, the one-liners, and the motivational speeches that we've seen Mike Tomlin give, there's no question in my mind that it would be highly entertaining. And to me, it would be a huge loss for everybody that's a fan of the National Football League not having him as a head coach because of how inspired his teams would always play, how competitive his teams always were. So I just think that would be a tremendous loss for all of us. And so I don't want to imagine the Pittsburgh Steelers, the NFL as a whole, without Mike Tomlin coaching, but I think we could be seeing him make that decision this offseason just based on where he's at in his career and where his personal life is at.
What a world we would be living in without Pete Carroll, without Bill Belichick, without Nick Saban, obviously in their same roles, and potentially now without Mike Tomlin. I mean, that would be an historic offseason. It already is. But to add Mike Tomlin to that list of names would be completely outrageous. And he would be a tremendous broadcaster. You know, the preparation that he would put in, he's got that personality. People love to play for him. I think he would be great on a set. But if I'm any sports organization, I'm throwing all the money I can at him to be an advisor. Come in here, tell me how to build a culture. Come in here, show our leaders how to lead. I mean, there's many jobs that he could take in sports or in business where he could make a ton of money and have a more flexible schedule. And you're right, Cece, we often don't think of these people as human beings. We think of them as athletes. We think of them as coaches. We just look at the results because that's what we're supposed to do. But he had a really tumultuous season. He dealt with, obviously, a lot of injuries. They fired their offensive coordinator in midseason, which is very uncanny for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I just wonder at some point after 17 seasons when you're exhausted by the grind.
So it's an interesting point. Let me ask you guys this then off of that. The three of us are openly biased in his favor. We think he's great. We root for this guy. We think he's one of the best coaches of all time. Take a step back. Does he deserve more critique than we've given him? Hasn't won a playoff game since 2016. I'm not trying
to lead us there.
I don't believe that.
No, because they've been in quarterback purgatory.
Right, I agree with you.
That's the one thing that people don't acknowledge. Like, think about the game yesterday. The disparity that the Pittsburgh Steelers were at with looking at Josh Allen on the other sideline and they're rolling out there with, I'm sorry, Mason Rudolph?
Yeah.
You got no chance. Like, your margin for error in winning football games is slim to none. And think about the two turnovers early in the game. I mean, you're spotting them two touchdowns. That's essentially what the Pittsburgh Steelers did. That's what Mike Tomlin talked about. So that's got to wear on you when you got to use bubble gum and duct tape in order to get your team to get to 9 or 10 wins every single season. For them to be in the position that they're in, which is a perennial playoff contender, without I guess without average quarterback play. Yeah. I just don't know how you do that in today's game. And it's been a while since the Pittsburgh Steelers have had above average quarterback play. Even at the end with Big Ben, it wasn't great. And so my biggest thing is, if you're Mike Tomlin thinking about the state of affairs when it comes to the most important position in all of team sports, that could have him a foot out the door, because until the Steelers figure that out, it's going to be hard to be successful in that job, in that division, when you got Lamar Jackson, when you got Joe Burrow, when you got the Deshaun Watsons and the Cleveland Browns defense. So I think that's also something that factors into the math. And here's why it becomes a tricky state of affairs for the Steelers. They've had three head coaches over the last half century, and it's been a seamless handoff when it comes to the quarterback that the next head coach inherits. Chuck Knoll had Neil O'Donnell. He passes him on to Bill Cowher. They go 11-5 in Bill Cowher's first year. Okay. Bill Cowher has the Ben Roethlisberger, and he hands him off to Mike Tomlin. And in year one with Mike Tomlin, you're talking about them being in the playoffs 10-6, in the second year winning a Super Bowl. You don't have that handoff with the above average to Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in this scenario, which is why this is uncharted territory for the Pittsburgh franchise.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Question has to be asked. Do we think we saw Mike Tomlin's last game as head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers? We will answer that, plus CC's QB power rankings coming up. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance on ESPN Radio. Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. It's time for Canty's NFL Power Rankings.
All right, CC, we're not doing teams today. We're doing QBs. Top eight. Eight remaining quarterbacks in the NFL playoffs.
Ah, yes. Don't you love that football music?
Love
it. And it's the playoff edition of the Power Rankings. I love it. We're in it. This is when it matters the most. Guys playing for jewelry, also playing for legacies. Let's get this thing kicked off with number eight.
Number eight.
The Bake Show. Baker Mayfield. He became the first quarterback in Buccaneers history to throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns in a postseason game. His 337 passing yards were also third most in Bucs playoff history. Only Tom Brady has had more. The team ripped off five wins in their last six games to win the division and punched their ticket to the second season. During that span, Baker Mayfield was top 10 in passer rating, 11 touchdowns, three interceptions, and 1,456 yards passing. Outstanding performance by Baker down the stretch. And that was capped off with an exclamation point with the home playoff win last night. Baker Mayfield playing really good football. Next.
Number seven.
Jared Goff, the tip of the spear for the Detroit Lions offense. Ben Johnson has done a great job of being able to dial it up. And this is an offense in Detroit that has finished second in explosive plays. That's plays of 20 yards or more in the regular season. The only team that had more was the San Francisco 49ers, and they only had one more explosive play than the Detroit Lions. That's how good this Lions offense is. And of course, Jared Goff is the point guard. He was a perfect 22 when pressured by the Rams defense on Sunday night, and he led three straight 75-yard touchdown drives to start the game, set the tone. But also, the most impressive part of what Jared Goff did was cashing out at the end of the game with two completions for first downs in their four-minute offense that allowed them to take a knee and get their first playoff win at home in Detroit in over three decades. So shout out to Jared Goff. Shout out to Detroit Lions. Shout out to my former teammate Dan Campbell as a head coach getting his first playoff win. Next.
Number six.
Josh Allen. He was phenomenal yesterday. He accounted for all four Buffalo Bills touchdowns in their win. Three passing touchdowns, one rushing touchdown. He had a 74 yards rushing, including a 52-yard touchdown where he deked the slide and just blew past the Pittsburgh Steelers defenders. That was the second longest rush touchdown by a quarterback in NFL postseason history. Since Joe Brady took over for offensive coordinator of the Buffalo Bills in Week 11, the Bills have had a 7-1 record, and they've run by design on 47% of their offensive plays, which is the highest rate in the NFL during that span. Less Josh Allen is more when it comes to drop-back passing, and Josh Allen is simultaneously the reason why both teams will always be, quote-unquote, in the game. So, I mean, listen, as much respect as what we saw yesterday, the Pittsburgh Steelers defense was trash, no TJ Watt, so I don't anticipate that we're going to see that version of Josh Allen moving forward. I'm not hating, I'm just saying. Next.
Number five.
Jordan Love posted a 99.3 QBR against the Cowboys on the road in his playoff debut. Since Week 11, he has the best QBR in all of football, 21 touchdowns to only one interception. Only four QBs have had a QBR of 90 or above in the postseason, and those QBs are Tom Brady, Josh Allen, Jordan Love, and CJ Stroud. And speaking of CJ Stroud, he's further down the line in our power rankings, but he's not next.
Oh,
next, number four.
Next would be Brock Purdy.
Ooh.
Now listen, Brock Purdy, for as much as we love what the San Francisco 49ers are, has a little bit of show and prove, because Brock Purdy in primetime games hasn't been great. This season, Brock Purdy is 3-2 in primetime games, a 56 QBR, 8.5 yards per pass attempt, and an 8-7 touchdown to interception ratio. In all other games, Brock Purdy is 9-2, 80 QBR, 10.2 yards per pass attempt, and 23 touchdowns to 4 interceptions. So Brock Purdy needs to be up for the task on Saturday night. In a standalone game, of course, obviously going up against the Green Bay Packers and Jordan Love, who is red hot. So that's the thing that I'm curious to see. Now, he is going to have his full complement of weapons. The Avengers are going to be in full effect, that being Trent Williams and George Kittle and Deebo Samuel, Brandon Ayuk, and my vote for Offensive Player of the Year, Christian McCaffrey. We'll see if Brock Purdy can take full advantage of all of those guys being in the lineup. And then, of course, Kyle Shanahan dialing up the X's and O's. Next.
Number three.
The aforementioned C.J. Stroud. Now, I can't believe that a rookie is in the top three of my playoff quarterback power rankings after his playoff debut, but that's where I got to put him because of how good he was in that game. He was absolutely surgical. I mean, the numbers are what they are, over 250 yards passing, three touchdowns, no picks. But, I mean, it could have been even better had Dalton Schultz not dropped the touchdown pass and had he not been a little bit off on that deep shot to Nico Collins in the first half. I mean, it could have easily been a 300-yard day and five touchdowns for C.J. Stroud. That's what the tape says. But they didn't need him to have that because they won in blowout fashion, and that offense was just so efficient. C.J. Stroud becomes the youngest quarterback to win a playoff game, 22 years old and 102 days. Michael Vick had the previous record of being the youngest quarterback to win a playoff game. So the ceiling is only up for this guy. In the regular season, 23 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. He is going to win an MVP at some point in his career. And dare I say, probably going to win a Super Bowl at some point in his career too. Not saying it's going to happen this year, but it's probably going to happen at some point down the line. Next.
Number two.
Lamar Jackson on the verge of winning his second MVP. It might be his second unanimous MVP. That's how good he's been. And in the biggest of games, this guy has stepped up. I mean, the dismantling of the Miami Dolphins where he accounted for five touchdowns. The Christmas Day game against the San Francisco 49ers where they throttled the presumed best team in the National Football League. I mean, when are we going to realize that you can't fully quantify how good Lamar Jackson is just by looking at the numbers? The guy controls the tempo of the game, the complexion of the game. He's LeBron James-esque in that way. I don't know that we could say that we've seen a football player control the complexion of the game like Lamar typically controls the complexion of the game. There's a reason why only Pat Mahomes has a better winning percentage since he's come into the league than Lamar Jackson. Like, that's it. Only Pat Mahomes of active quarterbacks has a better win percentage since 2018 than Lamar Jackson. That's how good Lamar is, and I don't think people have given this dude his flowers because the way he plays is seemingly unconventional as opposed to what we see from your typical dropback passers. Next.
Number one.
Pat Mahomes. What's understood ain't got to be said. I'm not even going to go into it. He's the best football player on the planet, best quarterback in the NFL. Like, it's Pat Mahomes. Did we have any doubt of the outcome on Saturday night against the Miami Dolphins? Everybody knew what time it was. I mean, it's the fourth coldest game in NFL history, and this guy goes off because his receivers actually caught the ball. Rashee Rice was phenomenal in that game. Travis Kelce had another drop. He's going to have to clean that up if the Chiefs are going to want to get where they want to go. But overall, I mean, you feel great about where the Kansas City Chiefs are at because of who the guy is under center. So that's the list. That's 1 through 8 with the playoff quarterback power rankings. Top dog, Pat Mahomes. Lamar Jackson is second. C.J. Stroud third. Fourth, Brock Purdy. Checking in at 5. Jordan Love. Josh Allen is 6. Jared Goff 7th. The Bake Show. Baker Mayfield is 8. Smalls, you're my accountability partner. Any omissions? Any objections?
No omissions and no objections, really. I just think
how could there be an omission?
Yeah, definitely
no
omission.
Did the 8 quarterbacks in the
playoffs? No, I'm talking about
the order.
I'm not talking about the order. I'm talking about information.
No, of course not.
Very thorough. I love the list, and it's correct. It's just so funny that we're talking about Baker Mayfield being last on the list after last night. He puts up 300 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Wild, isn't it?
But he is correctly slotted on the list, I would say.
Okay.
And Patrick Mahomes, even though he got the win over the Dolphins at home, 10-2 at home in the playoffs under Patrick Mahomes, the Chiefs have been. I don't have as much confidence in him with this group as I have in years past, obviously, but I still think he deserves to be at the top of the list because he's the best player.
I think the controversial pick, you know exactly where it is, CeCe. It's at number six.
Josh Allen.
It's number six. Is that people are going to listen to this list today and say, wait a minute, after that game last night where he did everything that we've asked him to do, which is not do too much and run the football, which he did both. He did both extremely well. That people are going to scream and yell about the idea of Jordan Love and Brock Purdy and CJ Stroud specifically. You cannot scream and yell about Mahomes and Lamar being ahead of him. I'm sorry. Deal with it if you're going to have an issue with that. It's the other three that people are going to have an issue with. But I understand why you did what you did. Because Stroud, Purdy, and Love, you assume, are going to have no turnovers. At any point, you assume are going to give. You're always going to give everyone else the chance to win the game, even if you're not the reason to win the game. It's do I have a belief that you, quarterback X, or these three, are going to put your team in a position to win and not give the other team the ball? That Josh Allen has earned the right for us to always wonder, is the other team going to get the ball here? Is he going to throw an interception? Is he going to go at Snead when he shouldn't go at Snead? Is he going to run? Like, he's earned that right. And yeah. I understand why you have him at number six, but that's going to be the big takeaway from people on this, I assume. Don't you?
Yeah, of course. I mean, Josh Allen has a little bit of that Jameis Winston in him in terms of trick or treat. I said it when I was going through the rundown. He is simultaneously the reason why both teams are going to be in the game. That's the thing. Like, I mean, he had a tip pass at the line of scrimmage yesterday that almost got picked off. And I'm sitting there saying, when is the other shoe going to drop because of how good he was in the first half? I was just waiting on a Josh Allen turnover. Weren't you?
Yes.
Like,
always.
I mean,
in those conditions, you're just waiting for it to happen. Now, he avoided it yesterday. But if you base it off of the history that we've seen from him through the years, but particularly this season, why would you think that a turnover isn't coming by Josh Allen in the playoffs?
I do every single time I watch him.
Career high 22 turnovers in the regular season.
It may not be fair, but he's done it to himself. All right, coming up, the number one pick in the draft is actually going to enter the draft. What does it mean for everyone else around the league? We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance on ESPN Radio.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio. Evan Canty and Michelle are unsportsmanlike.
2022 Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams, 7th.
There's only one guy that can throw the ball like him, Mahomes.
How did Caleb Williams do that?
Unbelievable. He's awesome. He's really, really special.
The Magic Man pulls out the magic wand.
Confirmed, Caleb Williams declared for the draft. He waited till literally the last day possible to do it. He declared for the draft. We are on Sportsmanlike here on ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. We're going to get to your phone calls at 888-SAY-ESPN in just a couple minutes here, along with Michelle Smallman, Chris Canty, Evan Cohen with you on the day after. Mike Tomlin walks off on a press conference after losing to the Buffalo Bills, and the day after the Philadelphia Eagles confirm their absolute collapse and meltdown. But we did see Caleb enter the draft, USC quarterback, yesterday officially. He did wait till the final day to do it. Before we get into this interesting Mel Kiper sound, do you guys want to take a guess? Because I have no idea as to why he decided to wait till the final minute to do it. Because it doesn't seem like there's any kind of, I don't want to play for the Bears, right?
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, you wait till the last possible moment to make those types of decisions. They always have this phrase, deadlines to make deals. And so I think Caleb Williams, why make a decision before you actually have to? Everybody's presuming that you're going to be the first overall pick when you do. So it's not as if declaring earlier gives you some kind of advantage. I guess I see it from your perspective. Declaring doesn't give you any kind of disadvantage if you do it a few days before. Yeah. But I guess he's just waiting it out and saying, okay, today is the day I've got to do it, so let me go ahead and do it.
I don't know. The way that I viewed it was he's in control of this entire thing. I'm going to keep you guessing. I'm going to wait until the last possible second. I'm going to do this whenever I choose to do it. And maybe that's a wrong interpretation, but that's the way that I figured it. Because why wouldn't he have just declared, you know, days ago, weeks ago? We know that he's going to be the guy that's likely taken with the number one overall pick. So I don't know what the delay was for.
Yeah, this is reckless speculation. But based on that theory, is it the message to the Bears of, let's be clear, you're working for me, I'm not working for you. You'll be on my timeline.
I don't want to read too much into it.
I said reckless speculation.
Yeah, I don't want to read too much into it, but I will say this. I tend to lean toward where Smalls is going with this, just because you want to feel empowered as you go through the process as a player, because you don't determine who has the number one pick. You don't determine who's ultimately going to select you, because there's no telling what the Chicago Bears are going to do. The Chicago Bears could decide that they're going to trade down like they did last year. So you just don't know what's going to happen. And so you do want to have this air of, you know, being able to dictate what the process is going to look like for you, even though you might not necessarily be able to dictate where you're going to go.
So he gets drafted, we assume, by the Bears. Their incumbent quarterback, of course, is Justin Fields. Mel Kiper Jr., ESPN NFL draft analyst, of course, has a podcast you can get on the ESPN app, Field Yates. Interesting conversation that occurred, and of course you'll get to Mel with Daria Mel on the weekends here on ESPN Radio, about what they could do with Justin Fields.
So some maneuvering to take place there. And if you trade Justin Fields to Atlanta, you could get the 8th pick overall. So you could have 1, 8, and 9 field and be able to recoup a second round pick by trading down with one of those two picks, either 8 or 9. So a lot of maneuverability for the Bears either way field. But if it's me, I'm taking Caleb Williams number one and trading Justin Fields.
All right. I was shocked when I heard this. I got to be honest with you. Mel knows more about the draft than I'll ever know. But Smalls, the idea of the 8th pick in the draft for Justin Fields, like, I'm not saying that J.J. McCarthy, Michigan, and Michael Penix Jr., Washington are going to be Hall of Fame quarterbacks, but am I sure Justin Fields is going to be better than those two guys? If I'm Atlanta at 8, I'm giving up the 8th pick for Justin Fields?
No, you're not sure that he's going to be better than those guys, but you're also not sure that those guys are going to develop either. At least with Justin Fields, you have a body of work that you can reference as to what type of a player he is. And he showed signs of growth this season. And there was a lot of tumultuous activity happening in Chicago throughout the season. So the fact that he was able to come out at the end of it on a positive note, I think speaks a lot about him. And truthfully, I think the Chicago Bears, it's an indictment on the organization. You know, he hasn't had a lot of stability there. He's an electric player. He has a great skill set. I think there are a lot of teams who are desperate for a quarterback that are looking at Justin Fields and saying, if we could get him here, maybe we could extract the best out of him.
The Chicago Bears would be nuts to trade the first overall pick. Don't even entertain the idea of it. You're out of your minds. Like, you have to have a quarterback that can be a difference maker in this league and that can give you the kind of consistency that the elite players at the position do. The Pat Mahomes, the Lamar Jacksons. Like, that's what you want, and that's the kind of promise that Caleb Williams brings to the table. Now, whether or not that ever materializes, whether he ever realizes that, is yet to be determined. But based on the college tape over the last 3 years, why would you think that he couldn't do it? It's possible. It's on the board. As a prospect, his ceiling is higher than Justin Fields ever was.
Right. I don't think there's any conversation
about
that.
So why would you even entertain the idea of trading this guy away for draft picks?
No, but Mel is saying if you could get the eighth pick in the draft for Justin Fields, you do that in 2 seconds if you're the Bears.
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it. I mean, that's what you do. But, I mean, I guess what I'm saying is you're looking at the situation right now with Caleb Williams. The focus has to be about making sure that you put the infrastructure in place for the Bears, the offensive staff in place, in order to get the most out of him. So I think that's what it is. But, yeah, the eighth pick for Justin Fields, it feels a little bit rich if you're you're the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Totally agree. I would not give up the eighth pick for Justin Fields. Kevin in Durham, North Carolina, listening on 99.9. What's up, Kevin?
Hey, we all know that this is not the first time Mike Tomlin has walked away from the microphone. He walks away when he's asked ridiculously inappropriate questions at ridiculously inappropriate times. We need Brooke Pryor to do a better job of paying attention. Never say never, but never. Don't speculate about Mike Tomlin's future in the middle of a season and don't ask that question.
She didn't.
The
season was over. She didn't speculate about his future. She didn't even ask a question because he walked off. And I love Tomlin, but in this specific case, what we're referring to is she literally said, you have 1 year left on your deal. Theoretically, her next question could be, do you think that maybe, I don't know, Kenny Pickett should be extended because we don't know where she was going to go. He walked off. I don't think that's an inappropriate question at that time. If she was going to ask or anyone was going to ask about family or personal matters or anything like that, you have 1 year left on your contract. This season is over. You are now entering into what is contractually your final year with the Pittsburgh Steelers after 17.
She did her job.
Yeah.
Like if she didn't ask the question, she wouldn't be doing her job.
Right.
It was a gut-wrenching loss. The team was clearly outclassed, and the season has clearly worn on Mike T. I mean, the last few years have worn on Mike T. They haven't had a playoff win since 2016, so you can understand that. So Brooke Pryor was doing her job under those circumstances.
Absolutely, and it was not inappropriate. The question was not inappropriate. The timing was not inappropriate. And there's been all this speculation about Mike Tomlin's future, so of course she would ask that question. And in addition, this speculation is happening in an offseason where we've seen historically great coaches either walk away from their jobs for personal reasons or part ways mutually with the franchise. So it's more relevant than ever to ask that question.
No coach at any point wants a question about hers or his future. There's not a coach at any level in any sport that wants a question about the future. So there's never an appropriate time based on that logic. His season was over. We're Unsportsmanlike.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan Canty and Michelle.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.